Welcome to Still Entitled, the Adam Savage Project. I'm Norm.
I'm Adam.
I'm Joey.
Joey Vimelli, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
And I guess...
we are doing something we have done a bunch of over the past few years, which is we are traveling around the world together.
Yeah, yeah. We find ourselves this week halfway across the world in the future. A day ahead in the future.
Right, yes, it is Tuesday for us as we record this, even though it's yesterday to you when it's going up.
Yeah, and no surprise, if you've been following any of us on social media, we are in New Zealand.
Wellington, beautiful Wellington, New Zealand, at the south end of New Zealand's North Island. Mm-hmm. And it's like when we arrived, the weather was precisely what I had left in San Francisco.
Yep.
Mid-70s, slightly drizzly. It was uncanny how much the doors matched on both sides.
Now, before you guys out there ask, we're not going to talk about everything we're doing here. We're saving some surprises,
yes.
But it's also no surprise that the room that we're recording in, we are at Weta Workshop currently.
Back at Weta.
Back at Weta.
Yeah. We were here last, in 2016.
Yeah, a year and a half ago. Well, I want to say summer, but it was June, because their summer is our winter.
We're currently in the middle of Wellington's summer.
Yeah.
And they're all freaking out because it's in the high 70s and low 80s here.
Just coming off of their summer / Christmas break.
Yes.
I know, isn't that weird?
To say.
Exactly. Yeah.
We're right across the hall from Richard Taylor, CEO and co-founder of Weta, his office. And as always is the case when we come here, the hospitality is off the charts. We feel like family, and as you said, distant cousins visiting after a long time.
We're lucky. It's twice removed, right? So last time we were here, we shot a bunch of pieces. We covered some of the production that they had been doing at that point, Ghost in the Shell.
Yep.
And they are definitely in production on some films here, which we'll be touching on. But before we jump into any of that, we had a weekend.
You guys arrived last week to do some pre-pro for what we're working on this week. But I pulled up on Friday, and we on Sunday we went out to an airfield about an hour and a half north of Wellington, and we got to fly in the back of with some World War I airplanes that are hand built to perfect specifications of the originals by Peter Jackson's airplane company.
Yeah.
I got to fly,
let that sink in,
and be chased by World War I airplanes.
That was the most mind-blowing thing. So I knew that Peter has been a World War I and airplane fanatic, and he has started and been building these planes and collecting them and restoring them for years. And he said, next time you come, let me know, and we'll set up some flights. And so they did, and I took off. I was the first one to fly. I didn't know about the second plane, but about 5 minutes into my flight, this triplane German Fokker comes in, and we're like dogfighting, and we get to really feel from the back gunner's position on the plane. What was the plane?
It's a British RE-8, which was a reconnaissance plane in World War I. This is, you know, aerial combat in World War I was its unique thing, because it was mostly trench warfare.
Yep.
They definitely flew these to take pictures. And this plane that we were sitting in, we didn't actually fly it ourselves.
No, we were all passengers every time.
Very experienced pilots piloting these. But this plane was, correct me if I'm wrong, built from the ground up.
Uh-huh.
To the specifications, and the only currently flying one of this model. So the back seat, which is a beautiful, beautiful seat.
Again, every last thing in this plane is built perfectly to the specs of the 1,000 blueprints that were developed in Britain in 1916, 1915 to make this thing. And every bit of it is like a jewel of plywood and hardwood and cables and canvas. And
yeah, using all the same, what was it, Irish nylon bodies, mm-hmm. silver to protect it from UV.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like you were saying, you had the little camera, that little camera target, right? This
yes.
The plane was specifically for taking photos.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Of German trenches.
Yeah, German trenches.
The pilot would look over the left and have basically two sights that he would line up.
Those sights were not for the photography. Those were bombing sights.
Oh, those are bombing sights.
Oh, they were bombing.
They were bombing sights.
Ah. And then
I double checked that because I noticed it right away. No, that's for bombing.
And the rear seat, which we were in, had a non-functioning but articulating model of a machine gun.
Yeah.
That we could actually manipulate and maneuver.
It was built at Weta.
Yep.
It was good and sturdy, looked really real.
Yeah, the trigger did not work, but when you're in there, we were encouraged to see if we could stand up and point at, you know, at the pilot chasing us.
So here's the thing, is the moment the triplane showed up and I saw it, I realized, oh my God, Peter's amazing. He's incredible. He set this up so we get to see what it feels like to be up in the air with two enemy planes working against each other. And then I thought, oh, right, to fully play along, I should grab this fake gun and point it at the... And I couldn't. I've been so heavily trained in firearm safety that it was against my nature to point even this toy gun at another plane in the sky.
You know what's funny is I've used... like a Bolex camera, mm-hmm. which looks kind of like a gun, right? And I had that same feeling when I was shooting images. I'm like, oh, this doesn't feel right. Like, I'm pointing something at somebody.
Have you ever seen the Bolex rifle shoulder mount?
No.
Oh, there is one.
It's a total...
Oh, yeah, no, it's Vietnam era. There's it literally looks
for
like
for filming.
Totally.
Wow.
So for our viewpoint on the ground, you took off, and then they get that other plane rolling, and I go, what's going on? Peter says, oh, he's going to go chase him. I'm like, ha-ha, funny. Like...
No, we really did.
Yeah. And then we see him go up in the clouds and then just come drop down on you, which was amazing to watch.
So it also really brings home, and I just finished Hugh Sebag Montefiore's book on the Somme battle of World War I called Into the Breach, which is riveting and, like every other book about World War I, horrifying. But it really brings it home how primitive... The airplane was less than, like, 12 years old when World War I is happening. And this is a brand new technology, and you're in these things made of wood and paper, it feels like. Yeah. And when you see how close the German plane can get, you're like, how did anybody survive this?
What was Peter saying, like five hours you get to spend with the plane? To,
right. 5 hours
to learn
of
how
training
to fly,
and then, they
and then you're out. Yeah.
And most of the people on the stop with Campbell, like higher percentage of the pilots crashed and from the training than from battle. And I guess if you make it through the training, you're gonna be competent enough to fly in battle, but you're at a higher risk of dying from the training than you did in the actual battle stuff. And these are teenagers.
Totally terrifying when you consider also how young they were. Last time I was here, I mentioned to Peter that my grandfather had flown in World War I and that I had recently been given his flight diary. Peter was very excited because he collects all this stuff. So I scanned my grandfather's whole flight log and sent it to Peter. And Peter was able to find reference to my grandfather, Joe Savage, and some other records. He looked through flight log and told me, yeah, your grandfather trained extensively in France in 1918, but never saw action. And he said he flew the Avro 504K airplane. And then when we were at the airfield, he brought me over and he was like, hey, Joe Savage flew this plane. And there was the Avro 504K. Wow. Not the actual plane my grandfather trained in, but the exact same make and model.
They're in pristine condition, even though they go up. Like, they are well maintained. And then he said they take them all up.
At least once a month they take all the planes up because they need to fly them a lot. They need to certify the pilots a lot. Everything needs to keep in good working order. Peter didn't even get up in the planes when we were there, but it was clearly such a delight for him just to share this with us and the other folks we were with.
I mean, anyone who's seen the King Kong movie he directed, he is one of the pilots. His cameo is that he's one of the pilots. Or not the pilots, he's the gunner in one of the planes that shoots down King Kong at the Empire State Building at the end. That is his cameo in the film. So that's how he got his hobby across. It was really funny because the airfield's mostly grass.
Yeah.
And I think we took off on... we landed on grass.
Yeah, we took off on grass.
Yeah.
We
took off on grass,
it was grassy
too.
Runways.
Yes, grassy runway. But it was, you know, from where the hangar was, maybe a kilometer out. And so to get a better vantage point, when we were loading up on the plane and rolling out to the runway, he has a bus.
Yeah,
he has
a double decker
era World War One, like a London.
It's like a viewing platform.
Yeah,
right.
And it's a bus that's in his Great War exhibit, but it's like, as it was explained to us, the standard red buses, double decker buses you see in London, painted olive green, and that was taken for the war, and he has one of those, and we got on the second level and drove out to the runway to get a better view of takeoff.
Amazing. And you took some incredible photos. I'm going to post some of the photos you and I and we took on Twitter as after this podcast goes up. We're being somewhat calm about discussing it, but it was absolutely, like, sort of mind-bendingly cool and amazing.
Yeah.
We were. I just remember all three of us got in the car afterwards, and we were like quiet for a couple of minutes, and we were like, "Wow!"
Just eating our KFC or Kentucky Fried Chicken. Like, geez, that was a week.
So we are spending this week here because you are going on tour in Australia.
Yes,
next week.
Yeah.
Really funny.
With Brain Candy Live and Michael Stevens. We're doing five cities in Australia, and I'm really looking forward to that. Mm-hmm. And as long as I was coming down under, I figured let's make an extra trip to Wellington.
And I know for many people in the States, Australians and New Zealanders get piled in, grouped in one pile.
They're very different people.
Very
two different countries.
Very different. They speak about each other very differently, even how they participated in the war. And the people here have been extremely gracious. Let's try to paint a word picture of like what a workshop is like an operation. Because you know we've shown workshops and effects houses mm-hmm. of different scales, and of course a little bit of the rooms in Weta. But I think it's hard to communicate that it is over 100 people here, 150
full time staff, 140.
Yeah, it's well over 100 people here spread across the departments that we typically have covered on Test in terms of sculpting, you know, mold making, casting. But these are big, big departments working on multiple projects at once.
With large amounts of output required at mm-hmm. high degrees of perfection. You know, if they're working on a whole bunch of weapons downstairs. Mm-hmm. There are stunt weapons, background weapons, foreground weapons, hero weapons, all being finished in different degrees of perfection. It's a humming machine.
And it's not one giant warehouse. You know, some shops we've seen in LA are just very big empty spaces. Here it's kind of
a rabbit warren.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Yeah, you don't really get lost.
It feels very much to me like Industrial Light and Magic back when I first got there. When I first got there in 1998, the model shop was larger than it ever would be again in my tenure at ILM.
And you guys were just cranking out the prequels, right? Those were just,
I came
going.
In the last few weeks of episode one. Mm-hmm. And it was actually even less sequestered and specialized than Weta is. You know, there was a mold room, there was a machine shop, and there was the main model making room. So that was it. Here, Weta has spent so much time specializing in different departments. They have a sword master. They mm-hmm. have armorers. Each of these places requires its own support.
And what's clear is that they always look toward the future of how to make this kind of shop sustainable and how they can work with new technologies. Because there's a lot of hand sculpting here, but that works alongside the digital sculpting. Mm-hmm. It's not like now that we have digital sculptors.
It seems like the leadership here is really good on thinking that way and thinking forward while maintaining an artist's environment that's kind of this utopia almost.
Well, and we're only talking about Weta Workshop right now, not Weta Digital, which is a whole other department of hundreds of people also here in Wellington.
Right.
And they work hand in glove lots of the time, but they're two separate entities. So we're talking about the physical production plant at mm-hmm. Weta. And Richard Taylor, you know, we talked to him a lot this weekend about the philosophy of running a large shop and keeping people employed and what are the important aspects of that. And it's clear that from the top on down, this is a family.
Yeah, totally, totally. And what was it that they've been running this shop for over 20 years now? It's how many families have come out of this shop.
That was great. Richard said, he's like, he views it not how much profit or many movies they've run through, but how many babies have been born. It's over 80.
Wow.
How many mortgages people have been able to buy from the work that they're doing. I mean, those are the right things to be concentrating on.
It's something that barely exists anymore, at least in the states where I'm, Los
exactly.
Angeles, California.
And they're also one of the few shops that document everything meticulously. If you follow their YouTube channel, you know, they have these special effects pieces. It's great fun to watch the ones they've done on the work on Blade Runner, the bigatures mm-hmm. for that, and the costumes they did most recently, Thor Ragnarok. There was a piece on that. But like, they have a photo studio and a video team here that are constantly archiving.
Full-time,
work.
Yeah.
They do.
In addition to the documenting is also part of the fact that Richard like many of our favorite people, is a high-functioning hoarder. They don't throw anything out. Mm-hmm. So we're working on this thing for our project here this week, and like we needed a horn, like a devil horn, but not quite a devil horn. And they have bins full of them from movies going back decades, you know, of all different kinds. So they don't throw anything out. So they have this tremendous library to draw from in order to work on these projects.
And the walls here are, it really is like a place of creativity.
Overwhelming.
Like just lined with, you know, it feels like the whole thing is like a version of the cave,
yeah.
Right? Like
yeah.
Where you have workshop and creative space, and except that sprawling in like a rabbit hole, it's kind of well, breathtaking.
Also, just overall, Wellington is a magnificently beautiful city. I really, really love it here. This is my third time staying here. It's the longest time I'll have been here. We're staying for 10 days, you guys mm-hmm. for 12 days. Mm-hmm. And I just feel so at home here.
Yeah, I want to spend more time coming through here and driving around. I mean, this is the first time we see it in the sun, which is...
Right. It's been sunny for the last couple
and
of days.
We're hopefully going to be able to visit an exhibit you didn't get to see last time, Te Papa, which is one of their museums here, national museums. And there's an exhibit called The Scale of Our War.
Which we saw one piece of here mm-hmm. in the shop last time we were here in 2016, but I still haven't seen the full-size exhibit, and I cannot wait.
Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to that.
It's intense. I mean, the artistry there is amazing, but the actual like emotional intensity of it is insane.
Good.
It's great.
I'm in.
I think something that they get across is the how they tell a story through exhibit space.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
And
they're all storytellers here, and so it's not just the centerpieces, which if you haven't heard of it, you can Google it. It's these literally larger than life, I want to say, four times bigger than human size?
Maybe
bigger than that, right?
No, less than that. I think it's... I can't call it up.
Many scale, larger than human size dioramas.
You might
these
be
scenes.
Right, this is four times hence. Yeah.
But it's not just those centerpieces, it's also the accompanying storytelling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are kind of nodes. Like, if you think of it as this pathway of like the story and then this central like node or beat or pivot point to where you now enter a new part of this World War I story, and it's...
Well, and that's what, I mean, that's sort of the subject of what we're doing here this week. This entire place, Weta Digital, Peter, Richard, this is an engine for storytelling, an engine for making movies, making television shows, making props and pieces and costumes, making exhibits. They make exhibits that they take all over the world. They mm-hmm. work with our friend Greg Broadmoor on the Dr. Grodbort's exhibits. and it's so lovely to be in a place that pays such deep attention to that.
Yeah. What else are you hoping to do while you're here in Australia?
There's a few people who I don't often get to see that I'm going to see when I'm in Australia. There's a few people who I follow on YouTube, actually, that I'm going to get to meet for the first time while I'm traveling through Australia. And I'm really looking forward to that. I'm not going to give anything away right now, but hopefully I'll post some pictures later. I'm super psyched. It's great to come down to this part of the world. I love Australia and Australians and New Zealand and New Zealanders. And I still haven't even been to the South Island, which, given the way everyone says, have you been to the South Island? It sounds like it's totally different.
Wow, they just opened the ceiling. They're undergoing some little bit of construction here, so we're going to have some skylights being lifted up, but yeah.
Well, that's just open sky above us, isn't it?
Yeah, there we go. Are you going to try to watch any movies while you're here?
I got to work up the energy to keep watching Black Mirror. Each episode is so dark and sad that I need time for that. What are you thinking?
Well, it's funny. We did a spoiler cast last week of Shape of Water.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a few tweets saying, oh, you shouldn't do a spoiler cast when it's not out around the world yet. And being here, I went to a movie theater. You realize that the release schedules are completely they're different than in the U.S.
So Shape of Water is not out internationally?
Not out. Some movies are out earlier here than back in the States, but it's interesting to see which ones are out. And I got to see All the Money in the World, which is the Ridley Scott film with
not Kevin Spacey in
it. That's right. Christopher Plummer is amazing in it. I think he was nominated for a Golden Globe, totally deserving. Really interesting film in that knowing there were reshoots also. A very, being able to spot some of the ways, like think about how challenging it would be to get back on location to do that. Yeah. That was super interesting. And then you said you love Downsizing, right?
I loved Downsizing, yeah. It's a weird movie. And it's not the movie that they're advertising quite. It's stranger and cooler.
I don't watch trailers, but hearing people talk about that movie, I'm like, it sounds bonkers.
Yeah, just don't listen to any of it and go see it. I also, you know, being down here, I'm thinking a lot about Taiki Waititi, who did Thor Ragnarok, and also one of my favorite movies from last year, Hunt for the Wilder People.
Yes.
And he's got a first movie, which I have not seen. I was going to look that up tonight.
He also did Eagle vs. Shark. Is that right? Was that him also?
I don't know.
Everything
before Wilder People, I don't.
Or before at least What We Do in the Shadows.
Right. That's the other one I have not seen.
Oh, you haven't seen that one?
No, I haven't seen it. My kids keep telling me I'm an idiot.
You know,
it's amazing.
We got dinner with someone yesterday, a Kiwi, who said the humor in Thor was very New Zealand humor.
And some of the aesthetic stuff, right? Some of the ships were kind of...
Yeah, there's some Easter eggs. Beautiful nods to New Zealand and Easter eggs throughout the film.
That's great.
and was curious how, in the States, how that resonated. And it totally resonated. Like, the humor in Thor, I think we all loved. But I don't know if I identified that. I don't know if I could identify New Zealand humor.
Well, she was definitely saying it was unexpected on their part. Like, oh, wow, they found this funny?
Yeah.
That's something that we usually find funny.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe it's the Flight of the Conchords humor. Like, we're already kind of accustomed to that humor. Yeah. But the film industry here has its own personality.
Yeah.
And is we're knee deep in it right now.
And it's great that I love how well received Thor Ragnarok is, because we need more weird tangents to our movie industry. We, you know, better and newer, stranger voices always make the debate more interesting. It's just a net good for everybody.
Joe, are you going to do anything in the week while we're here? Anything?
I've been running every day.
I run everywhere. I bring some jogging shoes and that's how I see places. But I'm trying to surf. Taking surf lessons because we have like 9 p.m. days here, so they're doing evening classes.
Oh,
that's
wow.
The other weird thing. Yeah. The sun sets at 9 here.
Yeah.
It's like summertime.
We were in Cornwall. Yeah. It was the sun was setting at 10 p.m. So I was watching the sunset. All right, it's time for dinner. Like, everything was closed.
Right, like, as we're recording this, we have, like, 5 more hours of sunlight, and the sun sets in California in, like, an hour.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we're getting... It's also interesting, because we're hearing a lot from people who are reading news reports of what's going on in the States, and we're trying to offer our perspective.
Yeah, there's a lot of what the hell's going on over there questions from people here. I suspect that's happening to Americans all over the world. What are you people thinking?
So trying to keep in mind that we are also ambassadors of some kind.
Yes,
for the States.
Anyway, we've been getting our hands dirty here. Everyone has just been rolling out the hospitality, and it's been really exciting. And we cannot wait to start showing you guys what we've done here, which is still going to be time.
Yeah,
it's not going to be instantaneous.
As much as, you know, we spent 15 minutes talking about flying in airplanes and how amazing that was, but the work we're doing here is like the other 90% of our excitement. And I hate for that to be just a tease.
Yeah.
But as soon as we stop recording, I mean, the things that we can say. That we're going to be shooting some individual pieces. We're going to be seeing Johnny Fraser Allen very soon. Who,
Wonderful sculptures of the labyrinth from
Labyrinth.
From Labyrinth, yes.
Yes.
Like, what name is this from Labyrinth?
If you watch that video, he's a sculptor here who built out a model for a tabletop game of Labyrinth based on the movie, and he has now finished it a year and a half later. So
amazing.
We're going to be seeing that very soon.
You know, and look, obviously, we're covering some of the amazing artisanship and craftspersonship that Weta brings to everything that they do. We are doing it in a different way than we did it last time. And the way that we're doing it differently is really exciting for all of us to participate in.
We were given a good opportunity of being familiar here, being friendly with the people here, and having some great
We couldn't have done this last time on our first trip.
No, yeah.
We could have only done it knowing what we know and kind of being able to understand how this place works. And not get under their feet, too. because this is a fully running production facility right now. Yeah. They don't have any time for us to slow them down.
Yeah. No, there. You definitely, we see people rolling carts of things around, and it's an organism.
Oh, and, you know, people saw that I tweeted the other day that I got a helmet through security. I did bring the armor that I made with Terry English back in June of last year in order to show it to Peter Jackson and to Richard Taylor, because the two of them, you know, that movie, the movie Excalibur that Terry English made all the armor for, was a super important movie to both of them and for me. They had to see it. They had to see it in person. I wanted them to lay their hands on it. And it was very fun. Like, when I finally brought it up with Peter, I was like, you want to see some armor? And he was like, yes, please.
But you guys can speak it in language Peter and familiarity.
At least three suits of Terry's armor already. So right. We were able to talk about comparison things and original production details and details of the suit that he made with me.
And he brings the filmmaker's perspective when he watches that film, and having a empathy for Borman's production, mm-hmm. and how influential that was.
I was in Peter Lyon's sword shop yesterday, showing him Terry's armor and talking about it. He has a different perspective on it. He was a jouster. I didn't know that Peter Lyon
I heard
a jouster.
That.
It's like, when I was jousting, where else would here could a sentence begin like that? When I was jousting.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to go up against him.
It's deeply great to be able to share this craftspersonship with these folks. We're all like, you know, we're all adept at letting our freak flag fly. It's lovely to compare the various passions that we have.
And as someone who appreciates props, like, there are props along the walls from the past projects.
This place Peter is Lyon's overwhelming shop. In terms of props.
Yeah, Peter Lyon has some hero props that we saw last time, and it was great to see him again.
Like a Boromir sword.
Like, the pulse of just all of their past work still kind of feels alive here, mm-hmm. right? I still feel that excitement that when I saw Lord of the Rings for the first time in the theater, when I walked through here, or Dead Alive, like, mm-hmm. all that stuff just feels.
And we were talking, all three of us have watched all the movies, all the extended versions, all the DVD extras. I mean, you were saying it was like film school for you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, those special features were, I mean, that was an insane amount of content that they just gave out, that I think everybody was just amazed at not only the insight of how they made the film, but also the world of Weta and the world of the New Zealand film market, which no one really knew much about at that time.
And at the risk of, like, sounding like I'm over, at the risk of being too glowing, I will say, I cannot believe how much Richard Taylor, as CEO and co-founder of this company, gets done, and yet how calm and sweet he is every time we talk with him, deal with him, dine with him, hang out mm-hmm. with him. It's this bizarre dichotomy, because, you know, he's directly responsible for hundreds of people working full time, and he travels all over the world all year round, and still this place feels like a great family, as I said before.
Yeah, so hopefully you won't have to wait too long you start seeing some of the pieces we're shooting here. We may hope get one more podcast here before you get on tour.
Yep.
But all we can say is stay tuned.
Stay tuned.
And follow us follow you on social media for some pictures.
And we trust that what we do here will be on YouTube, but it will also be part of Tesla Premium content. There'll be a little bit of both.
Yep. Awesome.
Make sure we take care of everybody.
All right. We'll see you next time.
Thanks, guys.